Fox Markets podcast with Justin Waits.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 400. And today on the podcast, a couple of stocks, actually, quite appropriate. It's a round figure, 400 episode. And there's a couple of stocks on today's podcast that I hold stock in. And this is by no means an endorsement. Please do your own research for everything that's mentioned in this podcast. But I have chairman of PCG Entertainment, Richard Polden. Ticker code for that is PCGE, a very interesting company in a growing sector in China. Now, I know China's, everyone's saying, oh, slowing down. But yes, certain sectors are, but not the gaming sector, which is where PCG Entertainment is. Also, Alan Green on the podcast talks about Andalas Energy, which are formerly Seb, of course. Also, Advanced Oncotherapy talks about and feedback, and we cover a couple of other stocks like GSK, Legal & General, Barclays as well. So listen, like I said, please do your own research on any stock that's mentioned. None of this is endorsement or investment advice. In the meantime, please, where will the price of oil be? I'm probably the most bullish guy, apart from Ryan, who's guessed 1 cent above me on the Vox Markets sort of oil price sweepstick. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/OPS to make your guess. It's a double rollover. So you get, how much is it? It's something like 65.84, that's the dollars, $65.84, plus whatever the price is of Brent crude on Friday at 12, that'll be added into the pot. And if you guess correctly that price at 12 o'clock, then you win that entire cash bundle. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So listen, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/OPS. Cut-off date for the last submission is 4:30 Thursday.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waits.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Richard Polden, chairman of PCG Entertainment, code PCGE. Richard, thanks for joining me.
Justin, thanks for inviting me.
Now, you released results last week, and a couple of people said you should look at this company. And so I did. And I was pleasantly surprised, because I know Chinese stocks, have a bit of a hammering or bad name, as of late. And a couple of people said, even Doc, who comes on the podcast quite often, says, this is a company that's not like the others, just look at it. And you are turning a profit, and I quite like. But for people who haven't heard of PCG Entertainment, can you explain what it's all about, please, Richard?
Sure. I think the first point is that although China, again, in general, has come in for some knocking copy in the last first part of this year, you have to remember that in purchasing power parity, this is the largest economy in the world. Mm. So I think it's important in any investment portfolio to have an exposure to that economy. The only question, therefore, is how you're going to create that exposure. To give you a feeling for size, Hunan TV, who we know very well, has 800 million viewers. That's more than the population of the EU.
Yeah.
Uber are talking about getting into China. Unfortunately, their local rival has more customers in China than Uber has in the entire world. So when you're looking at an economy of that size, in an investment portfolio, I think you need an exposure to it. So the question is, what should that exposure be? And some years ago, we decided that we wanted that exposure to be media and entertainment, because disposable incomes are rising in China. People have more spare time. They want to be entertained. The 4G network is rolling out across the entire country. I mean, it's almost inconceivable when you find that you can't make a phone call here on a train to Cornwall. But they are actually rolling out 4G across the whole of China. And this is proper 4G. This is like having a broadband connection. So people will be able to play games, watch movies, watch television on very cheap tablets attached to the internet. So we decided to put together PCG Entertainment. We basically have, at the moment, two main divisions. One is the software services division, which provides management software and games for games companies to operate. This enables them to manage currency movements between different games, the play currencies that you use in the games. It enables them to look at who's playing what game, decide which games they should push. And that's, at the moment, the core profit generator of the business. Now, that industry in China is growing in an almost vertical line. There are more gamers in China than the rest of the world. Now, the second area that we're looking at is the CEO Nick Bryant's background is very much television oriented. He was involved in Sky in the UK, where he was part of the team that created the press red button, which I'm sure everyone's familiar with. Seems a bit old hat now, but in the day it was very innovative, where you could do screen within screen and select different channels within that split. Nick was involved with NBC, a director of NBC in the Middle East, which is part of Al Arabiya, and has a lot of experience in moving television programs from one country to another. So that's another area that we've announced all this. You know, we said this is part of our business plan and so on, but we're also working on doing that and developing that this year and next. Will we make other acquisitions? Yes, we might. We said, again, when we came to market, we intended to grow partly by acquisition. And we also have our operating subsidiary with its various media licenses. So we are a broad spread of investment covering the media and game sector.
Okay, so let's look at the CPDC acquisition, because that's very interesting. And that's creating, at the moment, I think, cash flow, isn't it?
It is, yes, absolutely.
So back in, was it February, I think, 2015, you paid $10 million in shares. And yes. But the entire is subject to certain, you know, performance criteria. It's going to be 20 million. But this is what is key for me. And I was looking at the performance criteria, and it's quite amazing. Because essentially, you won't have to pay any more money unless, let's have a look, is it, they have to, if it's anything less, if they achieve anything less in the next 2 years than 14.568 million, you don't pay anything more. Is that right?
That's correct.
And yet, you will pay sort of the 20 million if they get over 29 million in profit in a 2 year period. That's phenomenal. From where you are at the moment, that's a huge uplift, isn't it?
Well, look at the growth. I mean, we've announced one quarter where, you know, we've just doubled quarter on quarter profits.
Wow.
Now, I think one of the things that, you know, there was some criticism out there saying, you know, why don't we release more information and so on. And that's pretty unrealistic on the part of the commentators, because it's difficult enough to get the Nomads to approve unaudited numbers to be released anyway. And the more numbers you put in there, the harder it is to get it past the AIM regulators. So that's why we just released the bald numbers. The audit, and we'll try and get our audit out as soon as possible, will show the second 6 months audited. So that will be, will give people all the detail that they need.
Yeah, so operating profit from Q3 was $400,000, and Q4 more than doubled that, $820,000. So, yeah, that's very interesting there. So
so that gives you, so that run rate, just while we pause on that, and you think the sky-high numbers down the road are impossible, is an annual run rate of 3.2 million.
Yeah.
So actually, when you look at it in those terms, getting that up to 10 million is not such an impossible task.
Okay, so thinking forward then, you're talking about acquisitions, and how will you achieve, go on, sorry?
Let me say very quickly, that is not a forecast.
Yeah, okay, I understand, yeah. But I mean, you know, you can see the growth there, and people, like I said, people have to do their own, you know, research on this, and don't expect everything to grow exponentially and, you know, forever. So looking at acquisitions, I mean, and how will you finance these acquisitions if you have any in the pipeline? I mean, is it equity or, you know, I know you're starting to become cash flow positive, sort of. How will you finance these?
The intention would be equity. Okay. I think, you know, our share price has suffered in two ways. It suffered with the general Chinese malaise in the London market. And, you know, that has led to a fair amount of disillusionment in Asia with London. As I said in an interview the other day, you know, this is the country that brought you the libel rigging scandal. This is the country that brought you the forex rigging scandal. This is the country that is going to bring you the gold price rigging scandal. And, you know, the attitude of London that they don't want Chinese companies here because it's all corrupt, I think is ludicrous. There may be some problem companies, but it's certainly not all of them. I obviously don't think that we are one of them. We do need to get... We haven't tried to promote our way out of that position, by the way. It seems silly to fight a market. We said we were going to make an acquisition and we were going to be profitable. We are. So as that performance starts to come through, I think the market will recognize that. Now, having said that, I know that we've had some very long-term shareholders who came into the early stage of PCG while it was unquoted, who've been selling out. And some of that is institutional money where funds are being closed down, so they don't have a choice. And unfortunately, we just have to let them do that. But you will also note that people have been buying that stock. So, you know, is there an overhang in the market? I've seen those comments on Twitter and so on. Yes, there has been. We've had people that have been effectively forced sellers.
Yeah, well, looking at some of the questions here from private investors, one of them says, on the 28th of August 2015, was the last time the share register was updated, and there appears to be a seller. Can you please update the register monthly? And is that a possibility? And, you know, do you know if the seller stopped selling or what?
I know that there have been sellers, obviously. You know, we look at the stock, but that's their prerogative as shareholders. We can't tell them not to. What I can tell you is that absolutely none of the insiders and none of the locked-up stock has moved. That is monitored very closely.
Okay. All right. Another question here is, obviously you can't answer in detail probably, but someone says, what near-term news flow can investors look forward to?
I can't answer that, can I? We will update the market as soon as we can on any of our activities. I am on record as saying that I think news flow is far too restricted in the UK. If you look at the US and Australia, you announce the whole time what you're doing. We are thinking of doing a deal with XYZ company. And you're penalized in both those countries if you don't announce that. If you announce that in the UK, you're penalized for announcing it because you haven't actually done the deal yet. I wish we had a much freer flow of information in London.
Yeah. Okay, next question was, why was the recent trading update light on detail? Could it not have been expanded to gain a bit more traction from the market?
No, I think I've covered that point, actually. The more detailed we try and make unaudited numbers, the harder it is to get approval to release them. So we've gone for as simple a release as possible so that we can get it out as rapidly as possible. It's that simple. And if we went for audited results in more detail, then we wouldn't get them out until March, which we want to try and get the information out as rapidly as possible. It's that straightforward.
Yeah. Next question is, does the board have intentions of listing in Hong Kong?
This comes back to my out of context remark that I made, unfortunately, to my good friend Zach Mir. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned as chairman, I feel it's our duty as a board to deliver the best value we can to shareholders. Now, if that includes looking at listing in other markets, which doesn't necessarily, by the way, mean delisting in London, we'll look at that. We should. I think it's our duty to shareholders to get the best price and the best value that we can. And of course, because we're all major shareholders, we want that as well.
Yeah. So if it does happen, it's with the shareholders at the heart of this, isn't it? The interest of the shareholders
Absolutely.
At the heart.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no other motive in that at all. And let me say, to try and kill this once and for all, there is no concrete plan to move the company to a listing in Hong Kong or add Hong Kong as a listing. But I think it's the duty of any company to look at which market will provide the best price for shareholders.
Yeah. Are there any concerns at all about... I know it's ridiculous the way people are talking about the slowdown in China at 6% when it's a 1.3 billion population economy, and yet, you know, it's 10 times as big as it was like in 2000. But, I mean, is there any concerns at all about this talk of a slowdown in China or not?
Do you want the long answer or the short answer? The short answer is no. The slightly longer answer is that there's no slowdown whatsoever in games and media and people watching television, having games played in large arenas, even though the televised results of those games. There is absolutely no indication of any slowdown whatsoever. On the larger scale of the Chinese economy, 1% now is bigger than 20% 10 years ago. And a point I made, you know, this is very recent in China. We're talking about 35 years ago that Deng Xiaoping said he was going to modernize China. That's a very short period of time. Will China make a few mistakes along the road? Yes, it will. But in the last 35 years, it has become the largest economy in the world by purchasing power parity. And I think any investor ignores that at their peril.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's a very exciting story you've got here. But Richard, if you could, give us three reasons why someone should look and do some research on PCGE.
Well, Justin, the first reason is the question of an exposure to the Chinese economy. I think personally that that is part of any portfolio, and it's quite a major part of my portfolio. So I think that in any investment strategy that anyone follows, you should have exposure to different sectors and different markets. Exposure to China is critical. So that's point number one. Then if you're going to have that exposure to that economy, you have to decide the sector that you want to be exposed to. Now, that might be construction. It might be, so you could go and buy Fortescue Minerals, lovely company, brilliantly run in Australia. Yes, they are friends of mine. That's iron ore. That's selling a lot to China. That would give you an exposure to the construction industry in China. But my feeling is that the media and games sector is the most important because it's much more resilient than construction. And it's also growing absolutely exponentially as the Chinese get more money and they buy cheap tablet computers and so on. The last reason why you should look at PCGE is it is the only games and media Chinese exposure listed in London. So that's another reason for looking at that sector.
Do you know what? It's a very good point. Point number two there, the sector. Because we hear, like I said, a lot of noise coming from people reporting on China about it slowing down. But it's never really broken down into sectors, you know? And we all know they're you know, transitioning their economy. And so we probably won't see, like you said, the huge amount of iron ore being imported like it was. But like, see, you media and games, you know, a sector is probably growing. We don't know that. We're never told, you know.
Actually, funny enough, you are. All you have to do is look at the PCG Twitter feed. And we've put out a whole lot of data in the last month, 6 weeks, on the growth of the games and media sectors in China. I can't reel them off to you, back to you off the top of my head. But I think the other point I would make about the Chinese economy is that China is a savings economy. I mean, they save a lot because there's no care for the elderly, you know, pensions and so on. So the savings ratio in China is around 30%. The USA is 4%. And most of that savings in China goes into property and also into gold. So when the stock market gyrations happened last year and this year, the stock market is a much smaller percentage of the investment portfolio of any Chinese than it is of the investment portfolio of people in the West, in the US or Europe.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? While you said that, I'm looking at your Twitter feed now. China, Japan, South Korea, and the rest of Asia will account for $4 out of every $10 spent on all game software by 2020. That's a telling stat there, isn't it? Marvel. So, what's your last question? So, what's your ambition here, Richard? I know you're a very successful businessman, and you've done well with other ventures. But with PCGE, what's your ultimate ambition here?
World domination, I think, really.
Yeah.
No, our ambition is to build a games and media focused business that will ride that growth wave of the Chinese economy. That was the decision that we took when we created it 4 years ago, and that remains unchanged.
Yeah, I was going to say just world domination. Surely the universe is up for this. But Richard, it's been lovely to chat to you. Thanks so much for coming on, and please do come on again when you have some more news.
Look forward to it. Thanks a lot, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waits.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Brand Communications, Alan Green. You're right, Al.
Good afternoon, Justin. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm all right. We've had a rally in the markets, a little rally end of last week, and it's in negative territory again. I mean, you know, it's looking like ever increasing. We're in a bit of a bear market here, and I've got to say, I have reduced. I haven't sort of sold out many holdings, you know, because I research companies, and then I don't want to let go of them, but I have reduced a couple of holdings, you know, just because I want to sit on a bit of cash, just in case, you know, we're in this for a longer term. I think I can pick up a bit more, maybe down the line, cheaper, you know?
Yeah, well, I must say, I think I said last time that I went into defensive stocks. I went into Imperial Tobacco, went into AstraZeneca, was thinking of getting some Glaxo, which I wish I had, because they published their final results at about midday today, and the shares have popped up quite nicely. So better than expected results there. But also Legal & General, and for some reason, Legal & General has taken quite a tumble the last couple of days, I think it's just generally weak with financials, so I might sort of pull most of my holdings out of that, and then that'll give me a bit more cash to sort of hopefully pick something up lower down.
But, yeah, it's funny, Nicola Duke, I think it was last week or the week before, mentioned GSK, saying it's an interesting looking chart. Look at that, it's making some higher highs, and it is. If you look at all the moving averages starting to sort of, I think the 20 and 50 day just about across the 200 day, so it looks like a good thing. And just tweeted out Barclays earlier on, I think in September last year, Barclays was 287. Yeah. They're now 166.
It's astonishing, isn't it? I know I was trading. I was jumping in and out of Barclays at about 220, thinking that I caught it at a low for the foreseeable future. How wrong was I? Thankfully, I got out. I sold out at a small loss. It would have been a much bigger loss if I'd obviously waited until now. But I know several of my colleagues are holding Barclays, and they're sweating bullets at the moment.
I bought them sort of. I'm actually down, but I bought a little just after the financial crash, a bit too late. But it's a tiny holding in my non-ISA account, and I hardly ever check that account. But it's taken a hammer in it. I may think about buying some more, I think, you know.
Well, I think at these levels, yes, but we had an interesting discussion on Tip TV yesterday, funnily enough, and one of the points that one of the guests made, whose name I forget, was that, of course, a lot of the banks have lent huge sums of money to the resource companies, the oilers and the miners, to develop projects. And, of course, those projects not only can't go ahead, the funds may be recalled by the banks. So of course, there's uncertainty, particularly with some of the smaller stocks, as to whether the banks will get their money back. And I think it's just a compounded, the compound effect of the weakness in commodities, the weakness in oilers, arguably putting the banks in a more perilous position. So where will it end? Indeed, it's.
I'm just looking at the Barclays chart, and they're nearing those. When we had a pullback in 2011-12. They're nearing those levels, which is around about 150 down there. It'd be interesting to see if it goes lower than that, because if they do, the lower, you know, the previous lower to that was the financial crash, and I think surely it can't be that bad. But here we are. Who knows?
You're right, actually. I remember that, because I did actually buy a block of Barclays at that point, and I sold some out and sort of came out. I came out at a profit, but I jumped in and out subsequently and made losses on some of the subsequent trades, as I said earlier in the podcast. But this is the time to buy. You know, when there's blood on the streets, it's time to buy. As Warren Buffett says, you know, it's when others are fearful, be greedy. When others are greedy, be fearful. So right now, others are fearful. So Perhaps it's that time to step in.
Yeah, okay, let's have a look at some smaller cap stocks. What are you looking at, Al?
Well, several stocks, actually, just one in particular we'll focus on at the end. But just wanted to bring listeners up to speed on, firstly, Advanced Oncotherapy, AVO. Of course, it's a well-known and well-discussed stock. But there was a really good research note published by Harbin & Co. at the start of the week, which is published on the Brand UK website, BRAND UK. If you go to Brand Stocks, you'll see the list of announcements and this note under there. But they just really summarised the developments that were taking place and also compared AVO to other players in the sector. Now, AVO's got an order book of something like $480 million. It's got two system sales already, and yet currently at 6.5-7p, it's got a valuation of just under $100 million. Now, that compares with others. Other companies which have proton beam applications or systems in place. There's Ion Beam Applications, IBA, has got a market cap of $643 million. Varian Medical Systems has got a market cap. It's got other products in its portfolio too. Market cap of just under $5 billion. Elekta, another player, $1.9 billion. And Accuray, who sell the robotic radiosurgery system CyberKnife, have a market cap of $283 million. So arguably, with those forward sales and with the developments, the well-documented developments over the past couple of weeks, particularly the note at the weekend that was published on the BBC website, it was a note in The Lancet, which is probably the best-regarded medical publication of all, said that proton beam therapy was now as effective as radiotherapy. And it's, if you like, received the green stamp of approval from the medical profession. So really, at current levels, you could argue that AVO is trading at a discount to peers in the sector, when as it's well documented, the demand for proton beam therapy and the availability of the centres is likely to rise. So
And I think the coverage also was highlighting, you know, first generation proton beam therapy systems, wasn't it? Whereas this is next generation, smaller, you know, it's safer. It can be put into like a residential. I had fact Barry Gibb from Beaufort Securities come on. He was saying that advanced oncotherapy can be put in, you know, like, in fact, the first one is going to Harley Street, which shows in a residential area, whereas the first generation have to be built out of town in huge bunkers, you know, because so they've got a better system. And I hold stock in advanced oncotherapy, and so I tend to, on a little dip, maybe pick up a bit more, you know, because one of the things that, you know, you talked to them about them a while back, and I got into them, and yet and then all of a sudden we go looking for other stocks, not realizing that the stock we got originally, it's a cracking stock, and we should get a bit more, you know, be a bit more sort of research for or in mind of what we've got in the portfolio already. I mean, rather than search out for the next gem, just stick with the gem you've got and top up every now and again, you know?
Exactly. And also, let's not forget, you know, on a financial level, there was a huge amount of director buying over Christmas. You know, something like £250,000 was bought, I think, by one director at 6.5p or 6.5p. So if that isn't a floor, I don't know what is. So, every time it dips down to there, pick some up. That's it's not a recommendation. I think if members do their own research, then they'll see that there's so much information out there about AVO. But it's a great company, and I think the note this week from Harbin has really highlighted the value and the discount that the stock currently trades at.
Marvellous. What's the next stock you're looking at, Al?
Okay, Andalas Energy and Power. Now, this, of course, is the former CEB Resources that we've discussed many times. Some concern, I think, amongst investors that the stock has remained suspended for some time. But as we know, it's suspended pending putting deals into place in Indonesia with potential projects to generate power and energy for Indonesia, where there is currently a severe shortage. And as a result, the cost of energy, the cost of oil in Indonesia is probably one of the highest in the world. So any company that has an opportunity there to sell energy to the the government and the country will do so at a premium. Now, Andalus have come back. They published a half-year report earlier on this month, just summarising what they've done. They've screened over 70 opportunities since last year. They've lodged a farming offers for three assets, which are currently being considered. And of course, there was also an announcement about the SEAC project, which currently produces 1,700 barrels per day gross. So that's a going concern. Cash generative already, and there's the Andalus has exclusivity over that agreement for now. Most recently, we've had two new appointments to the board. Paul Warwick has been, who was appointed non-exec last year, is now chairman of the company, and Dan Jorgensen has come from Northcote Energy and is now a financial director. So there's a pretty heavyweight board going in place, and the combined team there now has over 250 years of oil and gas experience. So, you know, if I know there's a lot of investors out there championing the bit, waiting for this company to come back from suspension, but it looks to me as though they're going to come back with some pretty tasty contracts and agreements already secured, and one would hope that the only way is up. So,
yeah, I remember Dave Whitby saying about before the announcement of Paul Warwick, he said, there's a guy hopefully bringing on board. He said, I can't say anything, but he's a gorilla. I'm like a little chimpanzee compared to this guy. His track record and his CV is amazing. And it is. Just check out Paul Warwick and do a Google search on him. And he's held some lofty positions, hasn't he?
Well, also, if people go to the brandUK.net website, go to Brand Stocks and look at the Andalus Energy and Power page, you will see an interview. It was a presentation undertaken by Paul Warwick last year when he was on the board of Talisman Energy. So he's a big hitter, this guy. It's he made a presentation at Oil and Gas UK, and I think you'll see what he says. It's he is a big hit to this guy. So, yeah.
Do you know what? I watched that video there, and he's a good speaker, you know, and very clear, very lucid, comes across very well, I think.
He's got gravitas, hasn't he? You know,
yeah.
He comes across as a senior industry player, and these are the sort of people we want on the board of Andalus. And I'm sure it's going to be transformational. Clearly, we don't know what's happening yet, but one can be sure when the company comes back, when the suspension is lifted, everything will be in place to take this company forward.
Yeah, I've got to say also, I hold stock in that company, so I want to be transparent. But people, you know, do your own research on this, but I do hold stock in that company.
Okay.
Even though suspended. And what else are you looking at, Al?
Well, finally, I wanted to take a look at a company we've discussed many times, just Feedback PLC. The epicode is FDBK. Now, things have gone rather quiet, but I just wanted to really give listeners a reminder of what the company is about. Part of the company is based down at the Sussex Innovation Centre, which is where we are in Brighton. And developed by Balaji Ganeshan, who's on the board of Feedback PLC, is a product called TextRad, which is textual analysis. So it the software examines images of X-rays and so on, and it can identify tumours and medical conditions earlier than they might otherwise have done, and potentially saves lives. Now, last year, I know you discussed, you had a chat with Balaji several times on the podcast, Jess.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, Feedback announced the first sale of TextRad in China, South Korea, and Canada. They undertook they agreed collaborations with a cancer hospital in Texas, the Princess Alexandra Hospital in Brisbane. They signed a memo of understanding with Alliance Medical over a lung cancer imaging joint venture, and the potential of TextRad. the feedback, the software product for lung cancer was alerted and highlighted by the NHS last year as well. They also set up a company called Stone Checker, which was after a very successful survey was undertaken with, in conjunction with Oxford Stone, and Stone Checker has now been set up as a separate company within the group, as has Prostate Checker. So, in other words, Texran has all these applications and can highlight conditions earlier than they might otherwise have done. Now, Dr. Ganeshan, Banerjee Ganeshan, has presented at the Society of Cardiac MR. He presented last month in January, and we're just waiting for further news from the company on additional developments and so on. But currently, the feedback share price is about 1.5p. It's got a valuation of about 3 million. It's already cash generative. It's selling about 500,000 sterling of Texrad products per year. So really, there's very little upside sort of factored into the current share price. And I personally believe that any announcements that are made by the company will be positive. Expect the business to develop, and it could be transformational very quickly indeed. I will say here that I do also own shares in Feedback PLC, so I want to disclose that at the outset. But it's been quiet for a few months, but I think we can probably expect further news as we progress into the year.
Marvellous. So listen, we're not ramping our own book. Please do your own research on everything.
Yes, you know, please do your own research.
We may be talking a lot of nonsense as far as you're concerned, but do your own research to back it up. So, cool. Thanks. I'll speak soon, fella.
Thanks, Jess. All the best.
That's it for the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Two things. Do me a favour. If you haven't got the Vox Markets app, then please go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app. It's a little bit of genius here. I mean, all you do is download the app, you know, log in there. You can log in with Facebook or Twitter, or set up a, you know, via email account there, and then set up a watch list. Every company on that watch list, if they release an RNS, then it'll be sent straight to your phone, to the front screen of your phone, if you've got a smartphone, of course. And that's a lot better than email alerts, you know, a lot faster, a lot more up to date straight away. You can get the news as soon as it's released. That's voxmarkets.co.uk/app. And also, while you're there, go to voxmarkets.com/OPS. All price sweepstake cutoff is tomorrow at 4:30. If you guess correctly the price of Brent crude by midday on Friday, that's when we take the price, then you win the double rollover. That's $65, but it'll be around about $90 odd, obviously converted into sterling, of course. But voxmarkets.co.uk/OPS. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.